Hello and welcome to Michael and Ivanka's Grand Podcast, a weekly podcast where we talk, work out what we think about everything in the entire universe. My name's Michael Forrest.
And I'm Ivanka Magic.
This week we're talking about Risk, the board game, not the board game. The concept, the philosophical concept of Risk. And I am going to try and make my face not look weird on this stream. Risk. Why did we... Because I've been reading this... Rich Dad Poor Dad book, which talks about risk a bit and financial investments and how losers are the people that are scared to lose any money, and that rich people aren't, that it's they brag about losing money like Texans. That's what it said in the book.
Is that what it said?
Yeah.
I'm always dubious about that claim, but yes, I think risk is something that I talk about a lot in work, at home, to do with vaccines, to do with whether or not you should risk not getting ice cream here because the ice cream at the next shop might be better. That happened last week.
Then ice cream risk, I'll write that down.
Ice cream risk. Shutter risk, that's to do with house improvements. Risk of... are you going to survive Mexico on your motorcycle trip? Yeah. Should you therefore not bother going at all, or should you just take the risk? What is risk?
What's risk management? What is that?
I like to think of myself as brave but risk aware.
There we go. Sharon says hello, good morning. Hi, Shashroom. Because we're live on Twitch, https://twitch.tv/MichaelForrest. That's MichaelForrest. Shaz says she is 100% risk averse here. And this is the thing, Shaz. So there is a misunderstood aspect to risk that we're going to cover today, which is that there is a huge risk to inaction as well, but that we massively underestimate when we're making decisions and deciding what to do. I certainly would count myself as a bit of a YOLOer, as they say. I just make decisions, that risky decisions, just and go, hey, I don't know if I always think through all of the consequences of a risk, but I just quite like certain kinds of risks anyway. Like some things I'm scared of different things.
I've never bungee jumped.
No, I don't think I'd do that.
But anyway, I have quit a job on a whim.
You have quit a job. Yeah, me, certainly. That's what we're going to talk about. I'm going to play... Oh, what do I have to... All right, we're going to play this. I'm just trying to think, what do I have to press on this thing? I'm just going to show my thing. Right, building up the music. My robot.
You can't say thing that much on a podcast.
Did I say thing too much? Yeah, it's because it's all technical words, isn't it? So I might as well just say thing because no one knows the difference. Or do they? How are you doing? What's the best thing that happened to you this week, Ivanka Magic?
I have identified and almost paid for the loft insulation.
This is not a good use of the best thing this week. This is a bad use.
It is
loft insulation.
Wool made out of sheep's wool.
Right.
Loft insulation that has the highest R rating. I've learned a lot about insulation. I went to Twitter. I asked Twitter what they thought. Got lots of good input from people who've really thought about it a lot. I have asked lots of questions, and I am now having sheep's wool loft insulation in our loft conversion.
And is it local
wool?
Is it local sheep's wool? After all that talk about wool
local,
last week?
Austrian.
Close
that's
enough,
not far.
I suppose. It's not too
Might
far.
As well
it's not
be,
Peruvian.
Yeah, it's not far. No, it's not, not Peruvian.
Yeah, it's not like mangoes.
No. And so I've done that. I've ordered super high triple glazed windows.
Okay, that's two things.
Two windows.
You've done two. Oh, well, now.
Sorry. They're sustainable choices for my loft conversion. How about that?
Yes.
There you
Splendid.
Go.
Well
that
done.
That gave me pleasure.
Well
yes.
done.
Yes.
Well done. Good work.
Still not got solar panels though. But anyway, how's you? What's the best thing that happened to you this week, Michael Forrest?
The best thing was I decided on Monday I'm going to just not work for my apps. I'm going to figure out my music stream. Last week I released a video where I showed how DJ Decane goes into his, does all the complicated wiring up and visuals and audio and stuff for his DJ streams. And so I've been in that video for a couple of months, and but just the whole time going, I need to sort mine out now that I've seen how much work he's put into his. So I thought, I'm just going to take the week. So I've been doing that all week, pretty much. And it's cool. Like I sort of figured out all of my criteria. I figured out what criteria to reject, which ones were important, and it's cool. So I've made this live stream now, my music streams, which you're going to see some little samples of the development of in the music breaks today. I can play live. People get a little avatar that walks along the bottom if they join in, that can do dances and things and jump and say that the speech bubbles come out of them and they can hug each other and all that kind of thing. I've got like dynamic, crazy, like live visualizations going on that I figured out how to do for free instead of paying $300 for Resolume. I can control everything from my other room. I came up with a nice little visual appeal where you see, like, I want it to be little things. So all my little robots that I've got, I can just sort of have them sitting next to the equipment, and it sort of makes it a bit more of an interesting visual scene. And I can jam with other people. Other people can join in the music.
My goodness.
Using the power of endless.fm.
Well, you like that, don't you?
Yeah, and I managed to integrate it and synchronize it all, and someone joined in yesterday. So that the best thing that happened this week, which was like suddenly not like someone else being able to throw things into the mix, new loops into the mix, is sort of takes the pressure off me having to completely kind of be on all the music stuff the whole time, and it lets me sort of step back a little bit and relax a bit more and like control the visuals and stuff like that. And hopefully we'll kind of keep, you know, some ideas coming in. So it's that's what I've done this week. And so hopefully I'm going to start doing these regularly. It was exhausting, though. It's exhausting to do. Like playing live like this, it's pretty exhausting. But hey, hopefully, now that I've like ticked all the boxes of things I wanted to achieve and figured out how to do them, it's going to be good fun. So there we go. That's the best thing this week. Just the whole week was fun. And I will show you like stage one where it was still a bit framey. This is the first example. Didn't really do any music in that. I was just playing with the transformer, so the music just stayed on a loop. I was like, why did I clip this? I don't know. Maybe something interesting happened at the end. Let me just check. No, nothing happened at the end. Right, let's talk about Risk.
Whoa.
I think just speaking of that, the biggest source of risk for me is overcomplicating something technically, so that there's too many things that can go wrong. Like the more complicated you make something, the more points of failure there are. And so I'm really a believer in trying to find the way to kind of make something as simple as humanly possible, even though I love things that can do, like I just explained, that it does a million different things, but in the way that's the most likely to not die and blow up a computer. Now let's weave that thought into what you're thinking about.
Blimey. Well, I think going back to my loft insulation or my windows. So we had to make a risk-based decision this week around the windows. And because here, as you know, if you listen to this podcast, this house that we've renovated for living in a hot climate relies on shutting windows and shutting shutters and having fans rather than air conditioning or an insulation. And this week we're ordering windows for loft conversion. Obviously that gets a lot of sun, so it's a bit of a bigger risk. So we've gone for triple glazed windows. And then there is also an aluminium like a shutter that you can buy that goes on top of the window, but it's phenomenally expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I phoned the guy, the country rep for the windows, and I was like, what? I was going to buy this, disgust. And he was like, you really shouldn't need this aluminium thing. If you're buying that window, you can buy these two blinds, which are cheaper than that. And so Nick and I then had a conversation, which was like, okay, if we do the blinds and it's not enough, then the only thing we're throwing away is two lightweight blinds and £100. But if we, but potentially saving ourselves £600. Therefore, we opted for the cheaper option in this case. You know, it's like, what's the risk of us not buying this? It's a bit hot and then we have to order the shutters. See what I mean?
Okay, that was
a, it's a boring example.
That was hard to listen to. I'm not gonna lie. So there was blind loft insulation options. One was more expensive, and you made the decision based on the fact that the real risk here was it's gonna be a bit cold in the winter or hot in the summer.
No, the real risk is that the risk can be fixed.
Throw away. Right, the risk, so you get another chance.
Potentially throwing away, you get another chance, and the environmental risk, if that's our biggest factor in all of this, is that we potentially throw away £120 and two blinds.
Right. Well, you could use them somewhere else, couldn't you?
Yeah.
So there you go.
The risk is so small. No, but like but breaking it down into what is the actual risk of not doing this, it's maybe the first people to sleep in it in July might be a bit warm.
Right, yeah, so there we go. But it reminds me of that thing of like, I'm going to mangle this quote, but can you afford to do this? If you can't afford to do this, you're either going to pay enough to do this properly or you're going to have to do it again, kind of thing. Do you want to, and a lot of businesses seem to do this, especially that companies I've worked in, they'd rather cut costs to make it cheaper to do, but then they just have to pay to do it again. Because if you can't do it right, be ready to do it again. I don't know, something like that.
What you're throwing away is really small. And it's not fundamental, it's another layer, so you're not choosing to buy the extra thing. But yeah, the buy once, buy well thing is a good approach.
What was this ice cream thing you were talking about?
The ice cream thing, well, we went out for lunch last Sunday, and we went to a cafe beforehand to have a coffee because it was a bit early, and the cafe does these really nice ice cream cups. My daughter was like, oh, I'll have an ice cream. We said, well, there's no rules. You can have pudding before lunch, but what if the restaurant has got a better ice cream than the cafe? Because you can't have two puddings. You can have one for a starter, but you can't have two.
Right.
And we can always come back to this cafe afterwards if we have to have an ice cream. So it's like, so we were able to discuss gambling, risk, hedging, all sorts of things, just on the ice cream decision. In the end, she didn't have the ice cream.
Right.
And then the one at the restaurant was very grown up and not at all to her liking. It was pumpkin seed ice cream.
Oh, come on. What the hell?
Grown up ice cream flavor. She wanted like
pumpkin.
So she did in fact miss out.
It comes back to what, like, the crux of what, where like the rubber meets the road of what risk is decisions. Like, what choice am I going to make? And so sometimes, like, too many choices, you just get choice paralysis and you choose inaction, and you don't, because it reminded me of when I went to New York and I just wanted something for lunch, and I went into this shop and it had like this huge long shop, and it had like every single cuisine on the entire planet as a choice. And I walked through there just going, oh, why? And I just came out having bought nothing. And it was too much for me. And I think, so starting out, but even, I even felt that a little bit with your daughter's story, like choice paralysis. Do I have this ice cream now, or do I wait, delay the choice, but risk that it's going to be pumpkin, some bullshit pumpkin thing. That's probably what she was thinking. But the fact that you can still come back, but it's like, it's very hard to make a decision, isn't it?
It is. I did read this paper recently, and I cannot remember under what heading or where I was reading it or how I found it. I will try and find it. But it was something like, taking longer over a decision doesn't necessarily, in fact, reduces the chance of you making a good decision. There's something about, like, we're not capable of holding all these different factors in our heads, blah, blah, blah. So actually, if you make a decision quickly, it's more likely to be a better decision than some sort of postponed decision that is overthought, essentially.
Yeah, and then there's a habit to that as well. If you're in the habit of, like, regularly making decisions, instead of putting off one decision indefinitely, then you're just going to get better at making decisions. And it's a muscle you can exercise. And that was something in this book as well. Like, if you're used to going, okay, it's better to make a choice than to just not think about that today. And it's a muscle you can build up. That's what I'm saying. So the longer you leave it, like, it, the landscape changes as well. So you have to be able to take opportunities. You have to be able to go, am I going to stop for these berries that I've spotted on for free, these free strawberries, or am I going to keep going? And like, if you're not, it's hard. Like, the more decisions you make, it's tiring making a decision. That's the Barack Obama thing, isn't it? The Steve Jobs thing. It's like they wear the same thing every day because it's just one less choice they have to make every day.
Yeah,
and that can be quite a time consuming choice. Like, what am I going to wear in the morning?
I think the decision. The decision-making element of it. I think with risk, it's very easy to get caught up in trying to be right and finding out what all the factors are that you need to know to be right or to make the right decision. And then, you know, and I think there's a limit to how many of those factors we can handle or even understand.
Yeah, there's many, like, you know. So factors, so I guess there's factors for a single choice, but there's also number of choices, there's two different sort of axes of
that's true. Going back to the risk thing, sorry, but off to decision making. Risk is only one element. Well, I think one of the things I was going to bring to this conversation was about when you're reporting user research findings. So you go and test something with some people who are going to use it, and then you come up with a parade of findings, and the person sitting on the other side is going, so what? And that some of them are absolutely opportunities, some of them are some sort of barrier, but some of them are very much around the risk of not addressing it. Like, what's going to happen? So, okay, users have a problem. Okay. So what if I ignore that? Like, what happens? How much business do I lose? How many people are going to fail to do a thing? How much reputation am I going to lose? Blah, blah, blah. So it's all about understanding what you're, and in that sense, it's not just about how much business am I going to lose. It's like, what is the risk of me losing that business? So it's like, and until you can express things properly as the risk, I think that's a helpful tool for people to eliminate what to act on and what not to act on.
Yeah. And then, like, the list of choices you get is a part of that as well. So if the choice is get vaccinated, don't get vaccinated, then people are going to sort of focus all of their thinking on that. And I guess that's why you're not like, cross the road, don't cross the road, or like get on a plane, get in a car kind of thing, where these are things that don't really feel like choices in the same way. But if you sort of frame something as a choice, like, are we going to leave the European Union? Like, yes or no? Like, it's sort of like, it's there needed to be more options. It was like few options.
I think part of the problem with the risk element of that's like, I don't know. So therefore it's better to say no.
I don't understand. I don't know, so therefore nothing. Yeah, like no one ever got fired for buying IBM, that kind of thing, taking the safe option, like not doing anything. No one's going to go, well, you're not going to get nearly as much flack for making a decision that was, well, for not doing something as you are if you make a bold decision, which is needed for success, and then it goes wrong. And then if there are like vultures looking to pounce on you, then there's a reason that people are afraid to do that. But
one bit that I don't understand in that argument, going back to the referendum, I'm sure I've told you the story about the day before the referendum. I was working with somebody who was like, and he finally admitted that he still wasn't sure which way he was going to vote. And like, and we were like, do you like your life as it is right now? Yes, I do. Well, then you vote not to leave. You know, it's like, do you go on holidays? Yes. Do you go truck? Do you go? Well, here's the thing about mountain biking in France. Here's the thing about, like, and how it's going to change. It's like, if everything, it's like the vaccine debate, I think, is, I've not heard it. When you just said it now, I was just thinking about the way I negotiate with my child often. Mm. She needs to feel like she has control over certain things, but she cannot have control over many things because she doesn't understand anything about the world, really. Yeah. It's very limited understanding. So you give her a choice of two good options.
Yeah.
Do you want these trousers or those trousers?
Where you've like...
You are wearing trousers today because it's cold. It's like,
yeah, you want there to be pros and cons to each option that an expert has kind of like weighed up and gone, look, you can either go high risk, low reward, high risk kind of thing. Like, but like, these are both kind of like more or less the same. It's just about like what decision you want. When one decision, and we sort of expect that to be implicit in a choice like a referendum, but like something like that where one, it's so grotesquely imbalanced one way, and it's like a mirage on one side and like X thousands of people's expertise on the other side. As soon as you've sort of been betrayed by the person offering you the choice at the end of the day, and they didn't do their job in like assessing the risk and assessing all the things implicit in those things.
I still don't know that, you know, that the referendum is such a terrible thing. I still don't know how many of the people making that voting to leave really thought they were making such a nihilistic choice.
Yeah,
like, let's just smash it up and work it out later. How many, really, does 50% of the British population, voting population, really have such a throwaway attitude to risk?
Yeah, let's find out after the break. So so this is an experience I've had with the so our local council, Queen's Park, whatever, they're doing this they're doing a referendum on some nonsense because it works so well, and I'm very discouraged by the fact that I put this thing up on Nextdoor and like one person said, oh, I'm going to try and read this document. No one else replied. And like, so how can they say, oh, we're going to leave this choice up to you, to a load of people that are too busy to read your document, your 10 years worth of content. It says 10 years. We got an email. 10 years of consultation, basically inaction for 10 years because they're so afraid to make any kind of decision. And then instead of finally making a decision, they go, oh, let's just like... put the process up to a referendum and say, do the public want to vote that 25% instead of 15% of money goes to some acronym that I don't understand? Like, and the fact, you know, like, and then the email they sent around, like, you know, I talked about the objectives being completely divorced from the actual policies. They just put this email with all the objectives in it and then, like, didn't really say anything about what they were actually going to do at all. And it's like, we're having a referendum. No one's going to read your document. No one's going to look at any of this information. You're not doing any, making any effort.
It's attached in a PDF.
It wasn't attached in a... No, but you've got to download a PDF to read the document. Mm. But the email didn't even have... didn't even mention any of that stuff. So it's like, you can't even... How is anyone supposed to address risk without even... having the time to assess the options? And why are you putting... It's like, who's making that decision? Like, when you put the decision in the place of someone that doesn't have any way of making that decision, it's... What are you even doing?
But I think that's, you know, like, the people running that, though, the people that sent it out, what are they afraid of? Why is their understanding of risk so contorted that they're spending 10 years to make a decision about putting some cycle lanes in?
Yeah, well, they're not even putting some cycle parking rails in.
I know that's what they've ended up with. What's the thing we're going to get least told off about instead of, like, what's the winning decision?
And there's it's political risk versus, like, risk of actually serving your community, isn't it? It's like, oh, well, they're so focused on the political risk that they're not focused on, like, what they're actually, who they're trying to help, I don't think. I want to get elected again, so I can't do anything, because then I might make a mistake, and everyone hates mistakes. Like,
it's like, it's, you know, Brighton, I believe Labour and I think it was the Tory councillors got together, certainly wasn't the Green councillors, to remove one of the cycle lanes. So in 2021, the world is at the brink of climate collapse. The way to solve congestion on a road is to get rid of a protected cycle lane rather than put in some sort of sensible alternative transport option or, you know, a park and ride that functions, because Brighton does not have a functioning park and ride system anyone uses.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of a... It's because some gobby taxi driver, she says, being really, I don't know who's had a go at them for it and who's put the pressure on, but somebody has lobbied for that, and Brighton has let Brighton, or super cool hipster Brighton, vegan capital of England, it's like, had its cycle lane removed. I mean,
I don't know how this connects, but this book, going back to this book, like, he does sort of make this point that, like, well, he sort of frames taxes as people sort of voting to punish the rich with taxes. But then, so, and I think there's a, that's certainly debatable, the idea that we want to do it as a punishment as much as, like, I don't know, maybe we do, maybe we don't. But, like, the poor and middle class voted taxes in order to tax the risk, but then ended up paying more taxes than the rich altogether. But if you think of that in terms of the powerful, it's like, of course they're always going to squirm out of it. You can sort of take that point out of it.
Wasn't tax invented by the rich landowners and monarchs of times gone by?
Well, isn't according to this guy, it was... Yeah. Well, apparently, it's like, to fund a war, there was a bit of a couple of wars, there was, like, whip rounds in the UK.
I mean, I've watched Robin Hood.
No, he says that my poor dad said that Robin Hood was a hero, and my rich dad said that he was a crook. You know, there's very much, like, this kind of, like, attitude to it. But I think there's certainly a point there that the people who have power will squirm out of whatever you try to impose on them, and it'll end up just hurting the rest of us. And I mean, I don't know how powerful taxis are, but you're getting lower and lower in the frame, and I have no way of adjusting.
I think anyway, again, it's going to go off the risk topic, but the whole idea that poor people vote for taxes because they're jealous of rich people is just a nice story to tell yourself, I think, if you are greedy.
Well,
oh, nobody likes me because I'm rich. No, nobody likes you because you're greedy.
He frames it as I use my intelligence to focused on money instead of, like, believing that these things. He says, like, how do you avoid being lazy is a bit of greed, not too much. But if you want to get out of being lazy, which most people are lazy by making themselves too busy to deal with the actual questions of life, of their relationships and things. And he sort of goes, if you're if you want to get out of being lazy, then you should think about use a little bit of greed to help you instead of feeling guilty about it. But this is it's interesting to get this like rich person's perspective on all this, because they just have such a different worldview that it's I don't know how we can communicate when we see things so differently. We have such different expectations, and they're very much, oh, they want welfare to, you know, they're going to have to be rescued by welfare, whereas we have been smart and created assets that earn us money and keep us, you know, we can keep going without working indefinitely because we have all these assets making us money. Mm. So they're looking at a completely different landscape of things to what we're looking at. So but then what we're saying is, yeah, but some of this stuff affects you too, like the climate catastrophe and the pandemic. Like, these are things that affect you too, and they're something that you can't like isolate yourself from. But
yeah. I think that another topic on risk is things like insurances,
right?
You know, I'm not averse to being phoned up by people who try and sell me insurance for me, going, well, I bet you that's not going to happen to me. And I know we have to have certain insurances, like, for example, your car insurance is as much to cover any injury that, heaven forbid, you inflict on somebody else. Mm. And that because you are driving a vehicle that, you know, an actual thing that can kill somebody. There is a risk that, and it's not a totally unreal risk. Mm. It's, you know, yeah. People have car accidents, that's fine. But then there's some things like, you know, this sort of illness cover and that sort of illness cover and this sort of illness cover, and like, it's like,
a bad faith list of choices again, isn't it? It's like, we're going to try and like, because people choose the middle choice. So if you give them like four options when there really only should be one option, then they're going to sort of choose the one that you've priced up a bit. And that, all that Sky TV is like all that kind of thing, isn't it? It's like, here are all your choices. And instead of being real choices, real trade-offs, they're just like ways to kind of increase, like make you just pay a little bit more money for something. You don't really need that. They could just as easily give you all for the same price anyway, because it makes no difference to them technically, unless I guess there's licensing deals in place. But I just wanted to, because I was thinking about this, what haven't I addressed there? You said like insurance. So what that made me think about, was that the rich dad and the poor dad. Like, it says poor and middle class people are terrified of losing money. And so everything is geared around never losing any money. And so it's sort of like you work for a salary, you get the money, and the money comes in, but very slowly and sort of like reliably. But instead of risking, like, the way money works is that if you can put money into something, you can get way more out if you're not afraid to lose that money. And I guess it's the trade, like, can you afford to lose this money, is essentially the gamblers. That you shouldn't be gambling with money you can't afford to lose. And then, like, the reason it's hard to get started building your asset portfolio is because you haven't got any spare money that you can afford to lose yet. But there is a risk, but he's framing it as there's a risk to just having this over-specialized profession where you get a salary that can go away, and now you've got nowhere to go. Like, if your job gets automated or something like this, and sort of saying like that it's better to work to learn rather than work for money. So the more different sort of aspects of a profession you can like put into your brain, the less risk there is of like just being kind of tied to one job, the way the sort of education system is educating people to be employees. It's not in educating people to be entrepreneurs, which I think is a fair point. And there's a risk to...
Yeah. I think there's sort of like an underlying assumption in what that everyone is the same and everybody has the same risk appetite, shall we call it that? And I think that's as much your nature as it is your, or how you've been taught and what you've been taught and how, if you want, you know, to play this theory out to its fullest, imagine if everybody was like that, if everybody was a little bit greedy and highly risk averse and willing to lose everything, you know, that there are, that doesn't, it's just the way it seems to me that the way you're that this is being framed, or the arguments being framed in the book, is like those people that don't do this are somehow, I don't know, wrong or missing out on something. Well, actually, it feels like they could talk more about, it's like, it feels like a defensive position.
I don't know. I think maybe I'm just not explaining it very well, if that's how you're reacting to it. Because he says, like, if you are, like, and maybe I just need to throw a bit more in here. Like, if you are risk averse, then there's, like, on the sort of investing kind of thing, there's different levels of that. But if you do just want to be an employee, I shouldn't say just, but if you do want to be an employee and specialise and do that kind of thing, then it's very, very important to unionise. Like, that's his point. Like, if you do want to stay in that world, you need to have the power of that union. Otherwise, like, to protect you, because you are putting all your eggs in one basket, even though society tells you that it's the right, safe thing to do is get a job. It's actually like you're putting all of your life into this one basket that could go away. And, like, unionization is the first thing you have to do there. So I think that that's a point that you would agree on, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I think that the attitude to risk is about being able, because in that scenario, what he's presenting is that actually the worst case scenario is not that impossible. Pension funds go bust because of greed. Like, it is actually a real risk.
Yeah.
You're really risking, you know, it's like you've been loyal, you've worked 40 years in the same place, you got your gold watch or whatever you got when you retired, and they blew your pension fund.
Yeah.
And that is not a want, it's never happened. It's not like a pandemic. It does happen on quite a regular basis, I think.
Yeah.
Big firms lose their pension funds. But I think that's presenting an actual scenario that I think many of the people making those decisions aren't being made aware of or haven't understood the true risk.
And
it's like this, it'll be okay, it'll be fine. It's, I don't know, you know, name some big firm that's had their pension fund go bust. I'm sure.
Well, it's not really in the employer's interests to highlight that risk either. Like, it's not really in the way the education system is. Like, it's not really in that system's interests to kind of warn people of that risk, because they want sort of compliant employees that will work well as within a company, and they're sort of a bit more scared of someone that can actually. Yeah. Figure it out. But then coming back to the levels of risk, it's like, even in that 4-hour work week book, it's, you don't have to quit your job and, you know, do something else. But he took, like, this guy, like, you can, like, the first step that Tim Ferriss says is, like, just try and get it so you can work remotely. This is like 2003, this is before this all happened. If you can work remotely, then you don't have to perform and you can actually use your time for other things and still get your work done. What this guy said, you know, he worked at Xerox. He took the job because he wanted to learn about sales. And that's what he was doing in the job. But he wasn't, like, spending all his money on luxuries and spending all his buying things. He was learning. He was taking courses in, like, real estate investments and, like, buying assets before doing anything else, and learning how to kind of build the asset. And then he still had a well-paying job, but then he was also generating all this income. He ended up generating more income from these property investments than from the job. And that wasn't necessarily a risky thing in the same way as, like, I'm just going to go out on my own in the cold and just ignore that path. It's like, how can you use this? How can you mitigate risk without It doesn't have to be all or nothing, does it? Is any point I'm making
that? I think it's a good point, and I think it's about what drives you, what you're interested in, what you're curious about. Mm. I am curious about day traders who make money on literally make money out of their computer in a way that I can't, despite what my daughter thinks I do for a living. But I've never been curious enough to learn about it. It is doesn't draw me in, and I think the fact I will endlessly read stuff about humans and this. I can't, but this is not something, I mean, that sort of need to invest in yourself on an ongoing basis, 100%. I think perhaps part of this is that people don't spend enough time or don't invest enough time in understanding the true risks of their lives. Or within their lives. And going back to this whole, one of the things that connects you and I is that experience of really bad shit actually happening.
Yeah.
And it is brought to us, I think, an awareness that many people don't have. And it is, if education doesn't give it to you, sometimes life does, is the awareness that some risks are really real. And you really do need to think about them. Right. So going back to the insurance thing, Nick and I have had a conversation about life insurances within reason, because when my father died suddenly, my parents hadn't had that conversation. Yeah. And my mum was pretty screwed, it was a different. Oh, so it's my... like and I think going back to the whole brilliant, full power to that guy who had a full-time job and then used it for something else. But maybe, I mean, he could just have easily have used it to get really good at knitting that spare time. And, do you know what I mean? It's just what you're interested in. I think it would do us all well to be more clear on what the risks truly are.
Yeah.
Stuff.
But I think what he'd add is obviously there's nothing quite like being interested in money and assets in order to kind of create wealth and freedom in your life for everything else. It's like it is a sort of special kind of crux of things that then, and his thing is like, it's not taught. We don't get taught how to think about money. We don't really understand it. So we sort of fall into this like risk averse understanding of money where you only ever want it to go up, even though it's going up by hardly anything, when if you understood it properly, you'd realize that actually, like, if you start practicing putting it into one thing or the other. But it does definitely say, like, you've got to be interested in it. Like, but sometimes the thing that you say, I don't know, sometimes the reason that you're not going to do something is a really good reason to do it, kind of thing. I don't want to be a landlord because I don't want to fix toilets. Well, instead of saying I don't want it, it's like, well, how can I not fix toilets? Okay, well, I'll get a property manager to do the toilet fixing, and then there's that kind of thing. I think you made some good points about, like, we often just paint ourselves into a dead end. Instead of like using the power of our brains to just go, okay, well, if I need money, like, what, how can I afford this? Like, what can I do to afford this? And but anyway, like, and risk, not risk, but like, let me just do the last break and then we can have a quick brief chat about what we're going to put in that. I pressed to end broadcast instead of like finish video. Risky. It's risky recording a podcast live. But I feel like risk looks, risk is entertaining in a way. Like, but you sort of have to pull it off. I think risk on stage looks good. If it's obvious that like it might not have worked out, and it does, that gives people this kind of really special feeling that you, like if it, you're sort of like doing something by rote and it's the same every time, you're just kind of practicing the same thing over and over again, you can, people get a reliable experience, but they don't get like a magical experience. And I think that's something I've always kind of looked for, sort of been biased towards in my creative output, but probably to a fault that means that I put out way too much inconsistent stuff because I'm like trying to get that magical moment to happen. I'm addicted to that. And yeah, it's not the same as someone that does, you know, 10,000 versions of the same painting and, you know, builds a name for themselves that way. I'm like, yeah, I like a different approach to it.
But I see, I think that I definitely am of the, you know, life begins at the end of your comfort zone and all of that kind of like, you've got to go out, you've got to try stuff. Yeah. You have to try stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the time there is very much, what if it goes wrong? Absolutely nothing will happen if it goes wrong, but there's potential for loads of good stuff to happen if it goes right.
Mm.
And I think in action, that's sort of like, the potential opportunity of what can happen when you try something new, go somewhere new, go to a party you didn't want to go to,
yeah.
go on a date you didn't want to go on, meet somebody, whatever it might be, whatever is your thing. I think that is a really powerful thing. I think one of the things you're talking about, that like the difference between sort of being brave or, you know, taking a risk versus just randomly trying loads of stuff, or like I'm exaggerating what you just said now, but there's something about calculating the risks
yeah.
and mitigating them and going, okay, so, you know,
thinking, using your brain as part of this equation, because I just YOLO it. I'm like, okay, let's try this. I'm an experimenter. Yeah. Like, but you got, sometimes you could just go, this is a risk, I should probably mitigate that. But yeah, so
I think maybe in front of your experiments you need to introduce the concept of piloting, maybe that give you like place to play without going full
But I don't like people that say, oh, I make experimental music, because I think like that they should have a concept of a successful experiment, and they often don't. It's just like, this is going to be boring every single time, probably, because I'm not actually trying to make it better through my experimentation.
Right. But that's about learning. Yeah. But that's the thing. I think there's like this, you know, going back to the, I don't know, the motorbike trip or something.
Yeah.
It's like, you cannot do it.
Yeah.
That's one option. And then you miss out on a big, you know, an adventure that where it is an adventure, whichever way you look at it. And then there's the working out how many of the steps you can anticipate, because you don't know till you're there. You know, it's like, okay, we can work out, we're going flying into Alaska, right? There's going to be bears, there's going to be huge mosquitoes, there's going to be like, do you know what, you know, like, and then there's, and I think having a little bit of a playthrough of what actually could go wrong for real.
Yeah.
Not the made up, like going back to the vaccine question, which I think is that's where, and what you were saying about the referendum and stuff at the beginning of the podcast, it's like this, oh, I don't know, so I'm going to say no. Is the problem. It's the sort of like, you know, the vaccine position is like, okay, for me, the risk of complications of the disease are higher than the risk of complications from the vaccine, so therefore I vaccinate, and there's other benefits. But but if you like going, oh, I don't know, therefore I'm just gonna sit here, things, one, that is 100% predictable that things are not gonna get better and they might get worse.
Yeah,
whereas if you take the risk, things might get better or they'll stay the same.
Or you know, if you fail, you learn as well. Like if you take a risk and fail, you learn something from that. And that's, again, the muscle you've got to exercise. You take a risk, you try something, it doesn't work, you try something else, it doesn't work. You maybe lose 6 months, you maybe lose a year. Like I've been doing that like habitually for the last 5 years, probably six, just every time, like trying a thing. But I think like, I'm never really doing a very good job of even thinking about what the risks might be in advance before doing it, because I just like jump in and go, okay, let's try making music full time for the foreseeable future, see what happens, without really a plan on like, okay, well, what's at stake there? But I did do that, like the fear setting exercise before quitting contracting, and I went through it like step by step. That's Tim Ferriss's thing, and that actually like gave me a bit more of a like the fears kind of tell you a lot about what you need to do, don't they? And we're good at fear. So, but if your attitude to fear is, well, I'm going to use that to help me handle this risk better, rather than I'm going to use this to just not do anything, then that's where you get stuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fear tells you a lot. You learn a lot from your fears. And then as soon as you write down, oh, my skills might flag, and then if I do need to go back to contracting, I might not know how to do anything anymore. You write that down, and then you go, oh no, I'm actually going to develop more skills because I'm not going to be stuck doing the same programming language for an extra year because that's how the project was started by these people. I'm going to keep moving forwards faster, and I'm actually going to do, you know, you have these little fears, and sometimes just writing it down like helps you realize it's not even a risk, it's actually like a benefit of the decision. We are imagination machines, aren't we? And our imagination is very powerful. And I think a lot of what the book I'm reading comes down to is like, if you instead of saying like, I can't afford that, you say, how can I afford that? You let your brain start working for you. If you say, I'm not going to, oh, there is a risk, therefore I'm not going to do anything. That's very different to going, okay, there is a risk which I'm scared of, but what else is there here? If you keep looking at it, you go, well, what's the risk of inaction? If you keep thinking about it, then you're going to be much safer. And that's your sort of the biggest thing you can do is like think these things through instead of shutting it down. The worst thing you can do is just shut down a thought. Assume you know everything. Assume that like, oh, it's too much, or like not make time to think about it is the my problem with these referendum, like my local people, my friends around here, is like they're not going to even make time to read that PDF, like, because it's not a priority, and so they're going to, we're all going to be worse off as a result.
I think the opposite of being risk averse is not stupidity. It's not a scale from mindless jump in, do whatever you like, from there's a definite scale, there's some work involved, but I think that being comfortable understanding risk is a really helpful tool in work and life.
And I believe that nothing bad can happen, and I made a song about it. I'm trying to think if there's a way I can play this for the outro, but maybe we can just, let's go into the, let's finish it there.
Enough.
Oh, wait. Thanks for listening. Sorry. Thanks for listening. I was just saying the professional levels of this podcast are really going well, and then had to bring in Ivanka mid. What were you going to say?
What I was going to say was that on the subject of taking risks and everything, we've sort of experimented quite a lot recently with our tools and our format and all sorts. So
you can't just think about everything. You gotta try it. Like, you know, this week I was trying out my streams. Like, I could have just like tried to make it perfect before putting anything up. But you learn so much from just like doing it. In a way that I just find I learn so much from just trying something compared to trying to, but it would be good to think about it a little bit more. But there's no time, is there? There's never enough time. Anyway, if you like the podcast...
Don't think, just do it.
Just do it. If you like the podcast, go to grandpodcast.com. That's us. Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
You can subscribe there in your podcast app of choice. You can join us live on Twitch every Friday morning at twitch.tv. Well, if you go to grandpodcast.com, there'll be a thing that lets you follow me, and then you'll get a notification when we go live. You can contribute if you want. Like Shaz said hi this morning, and Isotonic Studios raided us with one viewer just to test his Stream Deck buttons. So thanks for that, Darren. Darren is someone I like met 13 years ago when I was doing some complicated weirdness with my with my music setup, and I found him in DJ Decane's Slack, and as part of his crowd, I was like, "Hey, Darren, I know you," and he's from Dunstable, which is near Luton, which is where I grew up. So we're locals. I think he's gone now, so I don't think he knows what I'm talking about. He said he was just testing the Stream Deck buttons. You can find me at Michael Forrest on Twitter. Where can people find you, Ivanka?
People can find me at Ivanka on Twitter.
Excellent. And you can tweet at her about all the problems of Ivanka's clothing lines and things like that, and she will respond.
And shoe designs and Chinese vote patents on voting machines.
we're going to start a new podcast soon, which is going to interleave with this one. It's going to be interlaced with this one. My feeling is that most people at this point with the pandemic have a huge backlog of our podcast episodes anyway. So let us know if you're going to be running dry on grad podcasts. Shaz says, woo, even though I feel like she's not going to be super interested in what we're talking about on the new podcast. Maybe she'll just enjoy it for our interactions, and maybe you will. Listener, but yeah, I don't know. I'd quite like to get. We're missing next week as well because Ivanka's got guests. So hopefully soon, though, we can get started on this new one. As long as we don't spend too long trying to mitigate every single possible risk.
That's pointed at me.
And just go, because we'll do this one and then we'll do the next one. It's like, do you want to take the permanent job? Yes, because I can easily just quit in 11 months anyway. It's not permanent. It's just a word. Everything changes all the time. Life is change. Everybody, even if you don't make a decision, things will still change. So just try it, for the love of Jesus. because you know what? Let me see if I can. I'm going to try and play this song just to inspire you to, just do something difficult. So, yeah, we'll see you next week. Bye, 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 bye. Chaz says bye.